and welcome to this year-end edition of The Film Show on KBOO. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm SW Concer. This month, we're bringing you the second of a two-part special about a looming deadline that affects every moviegoer in the country. It's called Go Digital or Go Dark.
Back in October, I visited two historic independent cinemas in Portland, the Hollywood Theater and the Academy, to find out how they managed to raise the tens of thousands of dollars necessary to upgrade their projection systems. The change was a necessary one now that the major Hollywood studios have set January 1st, 2014 as the date when they stop shipping traditional 35mm film reels to cinemas and make the switch to 100% digital prints.
Today, we'll be visiting local film programmers and exhibitors whose common mission is to educate as well as entertain moviegoers. In both cases, they'll be holding on to their trusty analog projectors and will continue to screen films in both 35mm and digital formats. I'll be stopping by the Fifth Avenue Cinema, which for the past 25 years has been run by a dedicated group of film buffs at Portland State University.
But first, Conch is going to talk with Nick Bruno and Morgan Ruff of the Northwest Film Center about their plans to keep the projector lamps lit in the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Auditorium.
This is SW Concer for the Film Show, and I am in the projection booth at the Northwest Film Center's Witzel Auditorium, and I'm talking with Nick Bruno. He's the PR and marketing assistant for the Film Center, and also Morgan Ruff. And Morgan's the exhibition program assistant for the Film Center. Welcome, both of you.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
We're talking about the Go Digital or Go Dark deadline, which is coming up in days. It's basically January 1st, 2014. So you guys are all set up. The Film Center's all set up for digital projection, but you're still going to be working a lot with foreign films and archival films that are 35mm or 16mm in some cases.
Yes, we have a overall commitment to continue showing film on film, although we are obviously showing a lot of things digitally now. I think Morgan can speak more to the point of how we acquire those things from archives and private collectors, etc. That's actually what his job is.
Right, I hunt things down for a living. So like Nick said, we're committed to showing things on film whenever we can. If we have a choice between, say, a film print and a digital copy of something, we're basically going to choose the film print 99% of the time, unless there's some total weird reason not to, like it's beat up or something like that, which does happen. But the Film Center is 100% committed to continuing to show film. We just had our projector serviced. You know, we're constantly working on things, making sure it's up the top quality. So, you know, we'll be doing that until there just aren't any more prints, basically.
The deadline for Go Digital or Go Dark, it came kind of abruptly. There had been a lot of talk over the years about how the change in format was going to happen, but a lot of people are really caught up short, especially independent theaters, about this.
Well, it's an amazing savings for the studios, because at this moment, you know, obviously they're not doing as well as they once were, thanks to BitTorrenting, VOD, etc. However, it's not such a great deal for the indie theaters, because studios are offering incentives and programs for larger first-run theaters to be able to go digital, but the indie theaters and the art houses are pretty much left without any sort of assistance. They have to either kickstart to do the transfer over, or in some cases, like us, we're an arts nonprofit, and like the Hollywood Theater, which is an arts nonprofit, we were able to do some grant writing. We were able to get a grant to get our digital projector, and that's how we are able to actually show new films.
Morgan, I'm wondering what kind of effect this is having on archival distributors, like, say, Canyon Cinema, like some of the smaller art cinema, independent kind of places, as well as the foreign distributors. I know that they're not making the changeover as abruptly as the Hollywood studios are.
Right, that's true. With the smaller distributors, the avant-garde experimental things, film archives, etc., you see a lot less rentals, probably of marginal works that, you know, maybe places aren't keeping their film projection equipment up 100% of the time, or, you know, there's so many reasons, or filmmakers are transferring their work to digital files, which are far easier to deliver. You're saving on shipping costs, you're saving on rental things, all kinds of stuff, back end cost, film replacement costs. There's so many things tied up into it. Foreign distributors, at least the ones that we deal with, have basically gone digital.
And DCP is digital cinema projection.
It's digital cinema package. Technically, projection works as well because the package only gets at the delivery aspect of it. Either way you slice it, it's something you can't reverse engineer. That's how I always like to think about film, is in 1,000 years, if everybody's still around, whatever, if you took a strip of film and you saw a succession of images that looked about the same but changed over the course of the length of the film, I think you could probably figure out a way to make that move at the rate that it was meant to move and see the film. The soundtrack, that's a different issue, but anyway. With the digital cinema package, if you saw a hard drive and it looks antiquated and it's 1,000 years old, good luck.
So the room I'm standing in, the projection room at the film center, is fairly roomy. This is a pretty roomy, airy space for working with projectors. And so there's plenty of room to maneuver the different equipment. You've got your digital projectors with the servers, with the hard drives. You've got old school film projectors. So you can switch back and forth during an evening of screenings. But in a lot of independent theaters, this is not the sort of place that you'd walk into above the cinema. You might find some place that doesn't have great ventilation and is a little bit cramped.
Yeah, well, I listened into your October, or Jen's October interview with Dan Halstead at the Hollywood, and he spoke of something that we also are lucky enough to have, which is enough space to accommodate all these projectors and the ventilation system and the server. A lot of theaters do, in fact, have very cramped spaces. And so it is a choice between, even if they want to keep 35 millimeter or 16 millimeter or anything besides digital, it's a choice between going digital or going dark or the 35 millimeter. So in most cases, film goes.
So do you think it's going to become more of a rare thing to be showing retrospectives? These are films that not only can you see in a big community-oriented atmosphere where there's a lot of discussion that's available, but also not all of these are available on Netflix or streaming or video on demand, or for that matter, even BitTorrenting. They're not that popular.
Well, you're right. I mean, the retrospective thing is something we always want to do, I think, no matter how the film is available. We've shown things in brand new prints. We've shown things in DCP restorations that look almost as good as a film print, in my opinion. Things are getting a lot better that way. We've shown things from collectors, like when we did a three-film Roberto Rossellini and Ingrid Bergman, the Solitude trilogy over this last summer. It was a very interesting case because one film was a DCP restoration, one film was a Blu-ray, I believe, and one film was a horribly beat up 16 millimeter print from a guy who wrote the only available biography in the US of Roberto Rossellini, has a collection of his films in various states of disrepair. He was kind enough to lend us his print. Didn't look great, but how else can you see the film? I think anytime you're embarking on a retrospective project that is of somebody that maybe isn't like the utmost canonized filmmaker, you have to use those networks of connectivity to ferret things out of the woodwork.
Well, you know, there are certainly film buffs out there who put up with dirt and scratches on film the same way that old music aficionados will put up with the scratches on an old vinyl record.
Right, absolutely, that's true. There's a certain charm to it. But I think there's also a threshold of acceptability. And sometimes we're mostly good, we're 95% above that threshold, but sometimes you just don't know what you're gonna get until you get it.
Yeah, I would say that most of the time we do pretty well in acquiring decent prints, decent to great prints.
Another concern that's been expressed, especially by independent exhibitors, independent theaters, is the concern that this is still a relatively young technology and things could change dramatically in the next couple of years, 5 years, 10 years. All of a sudden, you've got really expensive equipment, much more expensive than analog film equipment, that's a huge doorstop, and you need to buy something entirely new for a six-figure sum.
Right, versus having a 35mm projector that's been around and in working condition for, you know, a couple decades. We're currently with DCP and 4K projection, but laser is around the corner, we're told. Personally, I don't know if that what that means. I don't know if it will use the same servers even. But yeah, it seems like with everything being digital nowadays, there's always some new product in line to replace last year's product. And that's a frightening proposition when we're talking about very expensive equipment like film projectors.
The projectors that we're leaning on right now are probably like 50 years old. And they're working great. You know, they're constantly serviced. They have oil, nuts and bolts, things that we all know about and things that we can fix. A chip is a whole different scenario. We had this one film a few months ago that came on DCP. We ingested it onto the server, which is what you do when you receive a DCP, and then it's stored on your local hard drives in the server. There's a key to unlock it on a particular window of time where you have been granted access to show the film. So that was all good. When we went to project it, it caused an error message to come up on the projector that was some problem with the processing board. So we rebooted everything, tried it again, same problem. Rebooted everything, tried a different film, no problem. But in the interim, we had called our service technicians and said, what is this? They said, oh, it sounds like you need this new board. It's like a $500 board to replace. It's just one of thousands of parts in a digital projector. We replaced it. Finished the film. I think we ended up putting the old one back in because we, in the end, determined that it was that film. Something in the transmission was causing that error message to happen. I don't know why those things happen, but they do.
Right. Well, especially since the old timers in the projection booth could work magic with a razor blade and a screwdriver.
Right. Absolutely. The physicality of the medium is so different. I mean, here you're stuck calling a 1-800 number for support that may or may not be open. It's a huge problem. And getting back to your original point about the mom and pop theaters now, that's a whole other thing. If that's the only movie that you're showing and there's a problem, that's a massive problem for those exhibitors because, you know, maybe they're the only game in town and they just have that one chance to really get the audience into what they're doing. And the format or the medium is very finicky and they maybe don't have the training to deal with it. Or if it's, you know, let's say it's in the middle of Eastern Oregon and there's no cinema service technicians within 500 miles, what do you do if it's a Saturday night and you can't play the film that you've signed up to play? That's a massive problem, and that's maybe going to drive more and more people to the multiplex. It's a sad state of affairs.
There's another issue that has to do with the difference between multiplexes and independent cinemas is that in a lot of multiplexes, there's nobody in the projection booth to fix the image anymore. And there usually is somebody at the independent cinema who's ready to step in.
Right. That's absolutely true. In our past experience with using multiplex theaters for PIFF, not to call anybody out again, but usually, you know, if you go to a large theater with, say, 12 screens, they have a projector in each room, yes, and there's a server in each room, yes, but there's a central control center that's a computer that sends the content to each server. So the projectionist for 12 screens is one person who is typing on a keyboard, setting the show up. That's why, you know, if they start a film and it's out of frame or it's in the wrong aspect ratio or there's no sound or it's too loud or it's too soft, it's very hard to find that person. Maybe they're selling popcorn, maybe they're at the ticket counter, etc. But, you know, for us, we have somebody in the booth at all times when we're showing a movie to make sure everything is going smoothly and it looks the absolute best that it can and sounds the best that it can. We want that to be kind of a showmanship scenario that has been mostly lost in film culture these days. You know, it's places like us or Cinema 21 or the Hollywood who have a small number of screens, dedicated projectionists who are trained properly to do the job, that should, I think, continue to be a vital force in the film industry because of what we're showing, because of how we show it, the experience that we provide to the public. And, you know, that's a give and take. Like, we want them to come and enjoy what we have to offer, but we want to do it in a way that makes them not be completely turned off and they want to come back. That's the most important thing for us, is having that sense of community of people who share those ideals.
Well, Nick Bruno and Morgan Ruff, thanks for inviting us into the projection booth at the Northwest Film Center. It's been great talking with you.
We're happy to host you, and thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much.
This is SW Concert for The Film Show. Now back to the studio at Kibu.
Yes, indeed. You're listening to a special edition of The Film Show on Kibu. I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm SW Concert. Today, we're bringing you stories about two local nonprofit theaters with an educational mission and the effects that Hollywood's digital conversion is having on their programming. This is part two of our look at the Go Digital or Go Dark deadline coming up in the new year.
In just a little while, I'll be telling you all about upcoming film events to brighten up these dark winter evenings. Right now, though, let's go to the School of Film in downtown Portland, where Conch will be talking with Matt Ellis, the programming coordinator for the Fifth Avenue Cinema at Portland State University.
I'm here with Matt Ellis, the cinema coordinator for the Fifth Avenue Cinema, which is the Portland State University student-run film program. Matt, just tell us a little bit about the Fifth Ave itself. It's kind of a fixture in Portland.
Yeah, it's actually run completely by students as a student group, which gives students complete, total creative control over programming, events, and kind of just running the whole show. My understanding is we're the last strictly film-only cinema in all of Portland, and we basically only show things on our 35mm projector in our main theater. But we do have the capability of screening digital at the cinema as where we're at right now. Not quite the same kind of cinema-grade digital stuff that the Regals have or even Northwest Film Center has, but over the summer, we upgraded to digital projectors that can screen Blu-rays, which I know a lot of cinemas around town are doing Blu-rays now, but it's a little bit more of a Band-Aid at the moment. I'm really hoping that sometime within the next 10 years or so, something can be found to, whether it's asking for a grant, whether it's, you know, finding money somewhere else, that we can actually upgrade to a true DCP digital projector, because otherwise we're going to be obsolete pretty soon.
Well, 35mm prints are still out there. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of them, and there's warehouses and personal collections. I guess the question is, are you still going to be able to get distribution for what you want to show to your fellow students?
That's certainly the biggest issue that we're dealing with right now. On top of being a college-run cinema, which makes us look like we have the bubonic plague to certain studios, we also have what's called a platter system, which is a little different than your typical reel-to-reel projector. They say it damages the print a little bit more because you actually set and build the print on a large rotating metal disc.
It's a horizontal, it's called a flatbed sometimes.
Right. A lot of studios, and especially private collectors are buying up rarer prints now. Private collectors never want to rent to anybody that has a platter system. So that's limiting our availability quite a bit. New films aren't made on 35mm anymore. I was just talking with IFC. Francis Ha, a film that came out early in this year, is the last 35mm print they struck at all. So any new films from even an independent distributor like IFC can't get them on film at all.
Well, there's a large segment of the film-going public who
love film. They love the look of the grain, of the color, of the contrast, everything about it, the way light plays through it, the depth of field. Is the Fifth Avenue getting audiences that other theaters don't get now because people are looking for that particular film-going experience?
There's definitely a subset of people that come in and they like that we're still playing film. They very vociferously remind us, like, I'm so happy I can see something on film and it's not digital. I'm not watching a DVD. And I kind of personally feel it's a little bit more of a subjective experience. I like both. I think they're both great for certain things. If I'm going to go see, you know, a print of Ben-Hur from the 50s, I would like to see it on film and not a DVD. If I'm going to see David Fincher's new movie that was shot on a Red, I would prefer to see it, you know, screened digitally because that's how it's intended to be screened. As screens get smaller, as people watch movies on the bus, on their cell phones, as, you know, we can stream just about any movie we want on iTunes and Netflix. And I love all those things. And I've seen a lot of really great movies that way. But especially if you're going to, you know, think about a movie that was designed, that was built to be played in a theater for a communal experience, you know, that's something that I'm not denigrating the experience of what digital technology has opened up to give wider distribution and give people the availability to see things they haven't been able to see before. But at the same time, I think it's really important that, you know, there's still places that people can go and that film can be a communal experience and that they can get together in one room, shut their phones off, look at the same screen, watch the same movie, see the same people doing the same things. And I think that as, you know, technology kind of frantically gets crazier and faster as we're going, I think that that's something that we should still hold on to.
Some of the old school 20th century film critics used to say that that darkened theater, it's an immersive experience. On some levels, it's a religious experience. There's this light in the darkness. There's this gathering of people. They're all sharing the same experience, and it's beyond the everyday experience.
Yeah, I've always kind of heard of this, the same metaphor, like it's the modern church, right? It's the church for the 21st century or whatever. I definitely think there's something special that happens. I'm not so sure I'd, you know, paint some sort of mystical experience on it or anything. I certainly love going to movies and seeing a great film in a theater as opposed to watching it at home on my small TV. But, you know, we're not getting away from smaller screens and we're not getting away from people streaming things on the internet. That's not going away. So why should cinema go away at the same time?
Here in Portland, there are a lot of opportunities for people to see multimedia performances that involve film. There's the TBA Festival, the time-based art for one. Do you see the new digital technology kind of helping the collective experience, the communal experience that film is a part of?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely do. You know, I think all new technology, especially if you're looking at the internet, is kind of inherently a social technology. And you look at what theaters like the Hollywood Theater does with a lot of their interactive screenings. They do the tweet-a-thon, they do, you know, the music video festivals they do. Everything is kind of centered on enhancing the theatrical experience for the audience. I think, you know, as people think creatively and as the technology kind of interjects and seeds new life into film, I think that that's something that is kind of an emancipatory thing.
So looking into your crystal ball, do you see the health of the Fifth Avenue kind of keeping up? Do you think it's going to continue to be a popular thing that's funded by student fees and the university and supported?
I certainly hope so. I know that, again, all public universities are kind of having difficulty with money right now, but without, you know, standing on a soapbox or anything, I think that what we're doing is something that's really not just important, but I think it's something that people enjoy, and especially if we have the opportunity to kind of revamp a little bit of what we're doing technology-wise and kind of get up to the industry standard, I think that it'll be something that students and Portland general public alike sees as pretty important.
Matt Ellis is the cinema coordinator for the Fifth Avenue Cinema on the Portland State University campus. Matt, thanks for joining us on The Film Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm SW Conser, and we'll be heading back to the studio right now.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jen Chavez here with SW Concer, and today we've been bringing you stories about Go Digital or Go Dark, the dilemma faced by theaters across the country to fund costly upgrades to digital conversion or be left behind as technology and the film industry move forward.
Well, if you've missed any part of today's episode, you can find the audio later on at the kboo.fm website. Now, before we wrap up this month's show, here's our list of upcoming film events in the Portland area.
Yes. On January 1st, the Hollywood Theater is home once more to the New Year's Day Grindhouse Secret Movie Marathon, with 3 35mm prints of surprise Grindhouse films starting at 3, 5, and 7 p.m. For more information, visit hollywoodtheater.org.
On January 3rd, listeners around Oregon City can take part in a screening and discussion of The Healthcare Movie at the Pioneer Community Center at 6:30 p.m. as part of their First Friday film series. The documentary explores the intersecting histories of Canadian and American healthcare. To learn more, go to orcity.org/library.
On January 5th, the Northwest Film Center once again screens short works from its Project Viewfinder 2013 program, in which local youth struggling with homelessness were mentored and trained in film production by the film center. Show starts at 2 p.m. More info at nwfilm.org. And in case you missed it, our March 2013 The Film Show episode about Project Viewfinder is still available on our website, kboo.fm/thefilmshow.
On January 9th, the Hollywood Theater and Mississippi Records will team up to present a Sun Ra double feature with two films featuring the jazz musician, Space is the Place and A Joyful Noise, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Learn more at hollywoodtheater.org.
Also on January 9th, the Northwest Film Center will show Targeting Iran, a documentary about Iran's nuclear program based on the book by radio journalist David Barsamian. Show starts at 7 p.m. and the film's director, Andy Norris, will be in attendance. Visit nwfilm.org for details.
From January 10th through 12th, the Clinton Street Theater will screen My French Film Festival, presented by Spectacast and Una France on screens worldwide. Each night will feature one comedy and one drama. Learn more at cstpdx.com.
On January 12th, the Oregon Historical Society will kick off its new Second Sunday series with a screening and discussion of A Flicker in Eternity, a documentary about a young Japanese-American soldier during World War II. The event starts at 2 p.m. and is free to the public. More info at ohs.org.
On January 13th, the Hollywood Theater continues its Getting to Know YouTube series at 7:30 p.m. with YouTube presentations and Q&A by Sean Creedon, Rachel Jensen, and Morgan Sutherland. Visit hollywoodtheater.org for details.
Also at the Hollywood Theater on January 15th, the Portland premiere of Coal Cocked, a documentary about coal trains and mountaintop removal mining, kicks off at 7 p.m. Again, hollywoodtheater.org is the website.
On January 20th, the Clinton Street Theater presents its MLK Day tribute with a 7 p.m. screening of King, a Filmed Record, From Montgomery to Memphis, the silent documentary.
And on the 22nd, the Clinton Street's Real Feminism series continues with These Girls, a documentary about teenage girls in Cairo, Egypt, at 7 p.m. More info on either of these events, go to cstpdx.com.
Well, that about wraps it up for this special edition of The Film Show. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. We'll be posting an extended version of today's show later on at kboo.fm/thefilmshow.
Thanks, as always, to the Oregon Media Production Association for their ongoing collaboration and support. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at kboofilmshow. Until next time, I'm Jen Chavez.
And I'm SW Concer. Have a great new year, and stay tuned now for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station, KBOO.
Thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated. featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com. Also, thanks to Merrill Hurst University, dedicated to helping adults revitalize their careers by offering part-time MBAs, including the Green MBA in Sustainable Business and the MBA in Healthcare Management. Evening, weekend, and online classes allow students to keep days free for work and other commitments. Enrolling now for winter and spring terms.
Time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, December 26th. My name is Kristen Yount. Two different subgroups of the United Nations came out with condemnations over the last couple of days. United Nations Relief and Works Agency spoke out against Israel and the demolition of Bedouin housing in Palestine on Christmas Eve. The destruction of the housing displaces at least 68 people. Children comprise roughly half of those. This number adds to the 1,103 Palestinians that have been displaced in 2013. The demolition left livestock reserves of 750 goat and sheep without shelter. Israeli officials claim that they only remove buildings that are built without permission, but Palestinians say that permits are not attainable. Amnesty International, Oxfam, and the Human Rights Watch issued a joint demand for Israel to stop expanding settlements and displacing people and respect international law. In the United Kingdom, stringent immigration laws proposed by Prime Minister James Cameron grabbed the attention of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or the UNHCR. A letter drafted by the UNHCR's High Commissioner talked about how asylum seekers and refugees could be profiled and denied housing because the laws would levy fines on landlords renting to undocumented people. Banks doing business with certain immigrants could face penalties, and people would be asked to pay for civil services rendered if they are not citizens. The laws would make it very easy for misinterpretation of immigration.